Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
TARP is on the field for the Seattle Mariners. This spring training game is going to have a short delay. We are going to keep checking in on it. For right now, Brandon Gustafson is in studio with us from SeattleSports.com. So we are going to stick with the Mariners. And if you've got questions, you can send those in. 866-979-3776. Going to have a little bit of a roundtable here. Let's get started with, we were talking to Shannon yesterday about Polanco, and she had been interviewing with him and hearing from him. We had Trevor May in studio, who said that he was most excited about him as an addition. He's a former teammate, so he admitted he was a little biased going in there. Just really loves the guy. Is he a player who on this team we are not nearly considering how impactful he could be?
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because when you look at kind of a mock lineup, he's probably hitting third for them. But it just goes to show they have some star power, especially Julio hitting right before him. And I think we're focusing a little bit on what they do and don't have. I think a lot of us have focused on third base in particular, right, with Rojas and Arias and what that ultimately looks like. But Polanco's a dude that could help carry this team in a big way if he stays healthy. And that's kind of the factor that you got to look at. He's had some injuries over the last few years, but switch hitter with power, really consistent on both sides. He's someone that could, I don't want to say like make or break this lineup, because I think if he just when he plays, even if he gets a little banged up, he's still an above average big league hitter. But he's someone who has 30 plus home run upside and doesn't strike out a lot. He works his walks. I think that just that kind of consistency is something they were lacking from a lot of their key bats last year, and that's something he definitely brings to the table.
BG, what's the short delay? I'm just sorry. All right.
How long exactly?
Ask Matt Nelson. Matt might know.
It's either going to be it starts in 30 minutes or we are going to be in rain delay for the next 5 hours. There is no in between.
Thank you,
That's
Matt.
That's what I figured. All right, on to real baseball.
All right.
Fran said because he switches swing, he doesn't crowd the plate as much. Have you heard of anything specifically that he switched with his swing, and what can we expect from this dude?
No, I think it's one of those things, Bump, where his swing, and Scott Servais has even kind of talked about it. France has this uncanny ability to make contact, which at times means that he was swinging at pitches that he really didn't have any right to. And instead of the feedback being he's just missing the ball, It's just weak contact. And obviously, Ty France isn't wanting to hit the ball on the ground, because even though he's lost his weight and is a better athlete and everything, he's still not going to be a speed demon by any means. But I think with France, with what he had over the last few years when we've seen him, it wasn't just that he was super on top of the plate, because he really wasn't. It's that his swing was tailored to hitting the ball up the middle or the other way. And in order to do that, you have to really keep your hands back. You got to keep your barrel back. And the easiest way to combat that if you're a pitcher is velocity inside. And in particular, if you're a right-handed pitcher and you're trying to get Ty France out, you're pounding him inside. And if you're missing as a right-handed pitcher with your fastball, you're typically missing arm side, and that's going straight into the guy's arm. That's something that we saw a ton. So just from a pure health perspective, I'm sure France is like, fingers crossed, this means I'm not getting hit 30 times in a year. Cause yeah, you can wear that all you want. At some point that's going to wear on you. But I think just him being able to stay in the zone longer is going to be a big part of it, because that'll also help him be able to take, if those guys are still throwing those old scouting reports at him and pounding him inside, being able to turn on those pitches, hit him to left field, hit him down the line. That's just something we didn't really see him do a whole lot of.
Now, obviously, we're going to get back to some of the veterans and some of the guys we're actually going to see on opening day, because that's really the story of what the Mariners can do this year. But it is the spring breakout game. And so there are a couple names that we all have our eyes on, Emerson and Ford, middle of your lineup. You've got Ryan Bliss out there, who we've seen questions about. Who are you most curious about should this game resume today?
Yeah, a lot of the hitters are going to steal the headlines, which is interesting, because for a long time, the Mariners farm system was predicated on their pitching, with Gilbert and Wu and Kirby and all those guys kind of coming up around the same time. Cole Young is and Locklear are probably the two guys that are closest that we really haven't seen at the big league level yet. Those are kind of the two biggest names that are close. But Laz Montez he's nicknamed Baby Yordan for a reason. The guy's huge. He's 6'5", 6'6", huge, powerful left-handed swing. He's probably going to end up being a DH, maybe a first baseman. But for now, he's a corner outfielder. He's someone I would love to see. Just get a hold of one because he's got ridiculous raw power. He's a true like just thumper middle of the order type guy. If he can make more contact, stay away from the swing and miss. So he's kind of one of those guys that I know a lot of Mariners fans who really pay close attention to the farm system have their eye on. But if you're someone who's kind of trying to keep tabs of this game, he'd be someone to watch for sure.
Tell me about Castile's progress. How are we looking? He came out kind of hot. You know, what are we seeing?
Yeah, spring training's always, you got to take it with a grain of salt, Bump, because I was thinking about this today, how for so many years we watched Felix Hernandez go out to spring training and his numbers were terrible because he was just working on kind of specific things. And everybody would kind of be worried, like, is this the year we kind of see Felix start to drop off? And then he'd go and he'd throw 7 shutout innings on opening day, like clockwork, right? So with the pitching side, it's just a feeling of getting your mechanics right, feeling the ball come out of your hand the right way, feeling just making sure that the pitches are getting in the general area you want. You obviously don't want guys that are going out there and throwing a bunch of 4-pitch walks and things like that. So for Castillo, it doesn't sound like the stuff is any different. I think that ultimately just he's got such a good idea of who he is with his 4-pitch stuff that, you know, don't really read too into whether it's a great start, it's not a great start for someone like him, just because those guys are out there just trying to kind of get the work in and get the body right leading up to opening day. And obviously he's been such a workhorse during his career, not just with the Mariners but with the Reds, that's kind of ultimately what a guy like Castillo needs out of spring training, is just getting that conditioning right, getting that body right to be able to go take the ball every 5 days.
So I've seen a couple texts about it, people saying, hey, the MLB app or this program says that Mariners and Angels, that the Mariners spring training game is canceled, so it's split squad. So we are in a rain delay for the spring breakout game where you're going to see some of these young names. So that is what we're waiting to see, if it will resume. We're separate areas. The one we're waiting on is in Peoria, where the weather is a little less intense. So we're waiting to see if that's going to pick up. We were told it was going to be just a short delay. You guys are going to see some of the youngest, most exciting Mariners, or hear some of the youngest, most exciting Mariners out there. So that's the game that we're waiting to see if we can send you to. And it's going to be really, really fascinating, because that is going to be a huge part of what this team's able to do. Speaking of what they're able to do, I got into a debate the other day with two friends about whether or not the Mariners could win the West. And one of them is set on it. Absolutely set. This is happening. They're winning the AL West. The other one was like, that's not going to happen. I mean, how realistic is it?
It's realistic. The Rangers finished 2 games above the Mariners and obviously won the World Series last year. The Astros finished 2 games above the Mariners, made it to the ALCS. I think the Astros are dealing with some injury stuff. Verlander's going to start the year on IL, and you kind of, you know what they are, you know what their lineup is, and their bullpen got better. The Rangers didn't really do a whole lot. A lot of their growth, if they do grow, is going to come internally from a full season of Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford is their other top prospect, who was their top draft pick last year, and it's expected that he's going to debut at some point. They didn't really go out and make a big addition, especially in the rotation, like it was thought they would. They didn't even re-sign Jordan Montgomery, who they traded for at the deadline and who was awesome for them down the stretch and in the playoffs and everything. So Mariners were right there with them, and they should be right there with them again. It's definitely not out of the question they could win it. It's not to say, like, oh, this is some crazy winnable division like the AL Central, because the AL Central is going to be the worst division in baseball. But it's more to say that just from a talent perspective and whatnot, the Mariners are right there with those other two teams. It's very close. All three of them are just neck and neck and neck. But I think for the Mariners, and we've talked about this a lot, just got to get off to at least a decent start. Mm-hmm. These slow starts these last 3 years have absolutely killed them. It's why they didn't make it in 21. It's why they didn't make it last year, on top of finishing slow down the stretch. And it made getting into the playoffs in 2022 made it that much harder. So getting off to at least just a decent start in April, May, going to be super important.
Is there ever a pattern to slow starts, or in your mind, did that always happen for different reasons?
It's the common theme most of the time was just the bats were struggling, and there's a ton of different factors that can go into that. Overall, though, I don't think it was always the same thing. I think last year it was the lineup was different. It was constructed in a way that obviously welcomed more strikeouts, and that's something that they've worked hard to address this offseason. So that was part of it. I think it was just last year in particular, it was too many key bats kind of struggling at the same time. And instead of all of them just kind of taking a look and be like, okay, how do I get back to the best version of myself? Like, it seemed like everybody was trying to be the guy and swing their way out of it. And sometimes swinging your way out of it means that you're going back to the dugout a lot faster on 3-4 pitch strikeouts. You're popping up at a pitch that you had no right swinging at, things like that. So having a little more stable veteran presence, like a guy like we were talking about, Polanco, Mitch Garver, I think that can help in that sense too.
We know the rotation in the bullpen should be on point, right, especially when they're healthy. But when you look at the other position groups. What group do you think has the most talent outside of the arms?
Well, center field, they're pretty good, right? with Julio. No, it's tough because you'd look at the infield and you say, well, Ty France is a former All-Star, and we think he's going to have a bounce-back year. Polanco's a former All-Star. He's really good. JP had a career year last year. And then there's third base, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just such a struggle for them. And then corner outfield's kind of three guys that have a little bit of similar profiles with Rayleigh and Haniger and Dominic Canzone. There's a lot of upside there, but I don't think the floor is quite as high maybe as it is with the infield, with the corner outfield. At least that's how I personally see it. But, I mean, if they could get a real, if Luke Rayleigh has close to the same year he had last year, they're going to be in really good shape, and that outfield could be really, really good. But there's obviously a lot of ifs that come with those three guys that are going to be playing alongside Julio as well.
How impactful is that injury to Santos? We know he's going to miss at least opening day, obviously, you know, maybe even up to a month or whatever. But who picks up the slack there?
Yeah, that one's tough because it was kind of thought that, hey, with Brash out, Santos is going to help pick up the slack. Now they're both probably out for at least a few weeks, maybe a month. It puts a lot more pressure, I think, on someone like Carlos Vargas to break camp that they traded for from Arizona. I think it also maybe puts a little bit more pressure on Gabe Spire and changes his role a little bit, where maybe he was that seventh inning type guy that's going to come in to face a pocket of two of three hitters that are left-handed and whatnot. Maybe now he's just more of a pure leverage eighth inning type guy. So it makes it tough. And obviously the guy it impacts the most is Andrés Muñoz, because it just puts that much more pressure on him. He was already going to be kind of the guy and have to be great, but with a little bit less support around him, it makes him that much more important too.
What's Salcedo's role in this thing? Obviously, he's Topa's replacement, right? How much do we need out of this guy? How good does he need to be for this bullpen to live up to his reputation?
Right. I think a lot of it does have to do with the health of Santos and Brash, because if those guys are healthy and you have those two with Spire and Andrés Muñoz and Ryan Stanek, who they just acquired, then Salcedo's kind of like a sixth guy, maybe comes in sixth, seventh innings and like it tries to maybe be more of a lefty specialist if they can get away with that. But if those two are out, it does add a little more pressure to him for high leverage situations. He pitched a little bit of that last year, not a ton because they kind of just rolled with their arms. But really, his importance to the bullpen depends far more on just the health to those other guys versus just him going forward into the season, I think.
The Mariners' big league game has been canceled due to weather, but the spring breakout game in Peoria remains in a delay. So stay tuned to see if the Mariners are able to pick that up and you can hear some of these really young, exciting players. Otherwise, we're going to come back with a new young, exciting player in Seattle. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Look, we weren't expecting to be here either, okay? You're supposed to go see the Mariners spring breakout game in Peoria. There is a rain delay. We are keeping an eye closely on this one to see if it resumes. Light rain's still out there. Bump, I know you had a tea time, and I think the important thing is we're all here together, and that's fun. You know what I mean?
No.
It's unexpected family and friends time.
No, I'm still going to go. I'm just going to miss a couple holes now.
I mean, but you're getting additional time with me and Curtis and Matt, and that is kind of worth it when you think about it.
I spend more time with y'all than anybody.
It's true.
Bump is ready to get out of here. You know, we spent time with earlier today was John Keim, and he covers the Commanders for ESPN, knows a ton about Sam Howell, who will be spending himself a ton of time here in Seattle following a trade to the Seahawks. I thought that a lot of what John had to say was really, really insightful. You also were nodding along to a few specific answers. Feels like we learned a lot from that interview. So let's take a listen to some of the key pieces. First is what he likes about Sam Howell.
What you like about him is he's smart and he's tough and he's pretty accurate. And so those are all traits that you can build on. He works very hard and football genuinely matters to him. And you can't always say that about every player. And certainly not about every quarterback that I've covered, but I think you can say that about him. He has a lot of poise in the pocket. He's a very even-keeled guy.
Now, there were times when Washington would give him almost too much to do, and you had a point about that. But also, he took more sacks than any quarterback in football, and John noted that part of that was on him.
I think there were times where some coaches here wanted him to kind of take a little bit more control when guys were running bad routes, et cetera. But I think he kind of feels like he probably had to build up to that. But all those other intangibles are there. Like, the players, like linemen, love the guy. He didn't throw them under the bus. He got, he was sacked 65 times. But here's the other part to what you just asked. A lot of those sacks were not on the offensive line. Like, it wasn't a great offensive line, but where Howell struggled was holding the ball a lot.
You were looking, Bump, at a lot of his passing stats. You were considering, you know, Eric Bieniemy's kind of role in some of this and what he expects as an OC and what his experience is as an OC. How much of this do you think is Sam Howell, and how much of it is just the role being too big for what he could do at that time?
I would say 40% is Howell. 60% is his coordinator putting him in horrible positions. Remember, my man threw the ball 612 times, I think, the most in the NFL. When you're essentially a rookie, because this was his first year starting, mm-hmm. you throw the ball that many times or attempt to throw the ball that many times, you're going to get sacked a bunch. And but then you also hear him talking about how he didn't get the football out of his hands quicker. And those are things that you expect to see out of rookies, out of young guys trying to figure out the speed of the game. When he played against the Seahawks, I didn't see that. I saw a guy who understood what was going on. But you're going to see those flashes. So I would much rather have seen some flashes from Sam Howell than just it'd been a horrible season and then these guys pick him up. You look at the film, you see the talent, it is there. Now it's about developing. Can you develop quarterbacks like the Mariners develop arms?
Now, there are, of course, areas where he can improve, but John Keim thinks that Seattle is a great place for Sam to continue to do that.
The hard part for Sam is going to be how long they stick with him, and not just this year, but beyond this year, because he's going to need to develop, and that's the way he can do that, and being in one system for a couple years and then coming in and playing. So that's why I think Seattle's a good spot for him. You can go in there, you got a new staff, you can play behind a veteran, and you can develop there.
Now, I'm going to pair that with this. Bucky Brooks was also on with us, and he was a little more critical of Washington.
I've seen him at his best. When he's surrounded by high-level players, he can play really good football. And I think when he was in Washington, he has some good players. But I don't know if their coaching staff necessarily put him in the best situations at all times. Now, I think you'll see him have an opportunity to play at his best. And if he is given an opportunity with the weapons that they have on the outside, JSN, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, the running game and those things, look, I think he'll have an opportunity to be a really, really good player.
Washington has Terry McLaurin, but they don't have DK and Tyler and all these weapons Seattle does.
Yeah, and they don't have Noah Fant. They don't have, they had a decent run game, but they don't have Ken Walker. It's more than just the quarterback. The quarterback is going to get the bulk of the praise and the bulk of the hate. But if you notice, unless your name is Patrick Mahomes, everybody got some pieces around them. That's why the Baltimore Ravens go ahead and get King Henry, because you know how important a run game is. So, yes, there was some talent over there. But as you know, football, man, it's a team sport. From the guys upstairs calling the plays to the position coaches all the way down to the lowest man on the totem pole on the roster. You need everyone to do their job at a high level, especially when you have a young quarterback. He needs all the support he can get. If he were to play in Seattle, I could honestly say that there's way more support here than there was in Washington.
There were a lot of people earlier in our show, particularly when we had John on, who were saying, well, why am I supposed to think that Sam Howell is so good if Washington was willing to part ways? And something John said that stood out during this interview was, well, sometimes both teams win a trade. And it's one team, it's their time to move on from this player and they've chosen to move on. And another team can still find use. I don't think that John Schneider is bringing in Sam Howell thinking that he's going to be the starter in 2024. He said as much during the John Schneider show. I think Seattle needed a backup and Washington needed to move on from having too many cooks in the kitchen.
Imagine if Howell was still on the Commanders and they draft their quarterback and they say, okay, Sam, you're going to, you know, fill the void until this guy is ready. How much is that guy going to learn from Sam Howell, a guy who is a fifth rounder who hasn't really figured it out yet? That's why you bring in Marcus Mariota, and now he can play that role. I've been in the league, what, almost a decade, if not a decade. I've had highs and lows. Go ahead and learn from me. Then you flip over to the Seahawks side. Seahawks are like, look, we don't want to spend the 16th pick on a quarterback or try to move up to get a quarterback or wait until later in the draft and pick up a guy that might work out. Let's go ahead and bring a dude who we have film on and understand who he is and understand how we can help them. So, yeah, both teams won in this trade.
Now, what's it mean for Geno? Here's what Bucky Brooks had to say.
I am sure Geno's been around the block enough to know that he can only control the things he can control, which is his performance. If he does that plays at a high level, he doesn't have to worry about Sam Howell being in there. But I think for the team, when you're tasked with playing so many quarterbacks, like I think 68 quarterbacks played last year, started games in the National Football League, you got to have a good backup quarterback. Sam Howell gives them a really good backup quarterback.
Geno doesn't have to worry if he performs, is what Bucky says. Look, Geno, this guy isn't going to come in and take your job if you keep doing your job.
Nah, Geno's in a good place. And twice now, John Schneider has gone out publicly and said, Geno is our guy. He said he's our guy until he's not. People ran with that and said, oh, what does that mean? Can he not be the guy in training camp? No. And then Howell comes over. He goes, Geno's our guy, and Howell is the backup. Geno's fine. Now, he's fine for this year. You still got to go out and play ball and progress and lead your team and do all the things a quarterback can do, because the Hawks are going to be able to evaluate Sam every single day at practice. They're going to be able to watch film with him, see where his mind is at, what is he picking up, what is he retaining. So there is a it's kind of like a side bet. You know, me and you bet, okay, Sheffer's going to win the players. Mm-hmm. And side bet can be like, okay, Marikawa's going to come be within five strokes of him. He's the side bet. Like, all right, look, Geno is the main thing. Howell's a side bet. We'll see what happens.
Talking about what it means for the draft, I keep seeing a lot of texts on the Mac and Jack's text line saying, hey, they need three quarterbacks to compete. Why not draft a quarterback? They're still going to add a third quarterback to compete, but you have to consider where the investment is going. You can have three quarterbacks come in when one guy is really low risk and a low investment, because you're only going to carry two on your roster. Mm-hmm. So if you give up a third rounder and a fifth rounder for Howell in a draft, by the way, where you don't have a second rounder, that feels a little costly. It feels very much like it's Geno and Sam Howell, meaning why spend a first rounder on a quarterback when you can bring in a UDFA?
No, there's no reason to draft a quarterback at this point.
No.
You can find a talented quarterback who played at a school who doesn't get a lot of attention or maybe just didn't get picked up and bring him into camp and see what happens. But don't waste a draft pick on a quarterback. You got other things to do.
All right, checking in on the status of that spring breakout game coming up next. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Wyman and Bob having a ton of fun out in Peoria, even though there is no baseball game today. So we are going to send you guys out there in about 15 minutes. You'll hear from them live from Mariners spring training. Before we get to it, we are going to wrap things up with a look at the NFC West. The biggest story in the NFL today is not about free agency. It's about the retirement of Aaron Donald. He leaves the NFL as one of the most storied defensive players ever. Eight-time first-team All-Pro. He was a Pro Bowler in every single season. Three-time Defensive Player of the Year, not counting the year in which he was Rookie Defensive Player of the Year. An absolutely phenomenal career. What does it mean for the NFC West now? There's all kinds of changes happening with these teams, Bump. I mean, does that mean that Seattle has a chance to leapfrog the Rams in the trenches?
Yeah, if we're breaking it down like that, then yeah, leapfrog them in the trenches for sure. But as a team, the Rams still got a lot going on. Matthew Stafford, Kyren Williams, who they found out of Notre Dame, who has been great. Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, Tyler Higbee. Now Colby is over there. Defensively, yes, Aaron Donald is leaving, but the Rookie Defensive Player of the Year is right there in Colby Turner, who had 9 sacks himself from the interior lineman, defensive lineman spot. So on paper, I think they have a chance to do it. That's why it was so important that you signed Leonard Williams, because you know that it's important to control the line of scrimmage. So it opens the door for the Hawks to close the gap, but I still think overall the Rams are a better team.
I think that I'm trying to find kind of like how this is all going to take shape, and we'll learn what the NFC West is going to look like over the next several months as we head into the season. This is, though, and Curtis, you mentioned it, the most impactful departure, the most impactful move for any team outside of obviously finding a quarterback for Atlanta, right? That's huge. But Aaron Donald has been the story of the Rams. The Rams obviously won a Super Bowl because they had so many other great pieces, with Cooper Kupp getting the Triple Crown that year. But, I mean, Aaron Donald's tenure predates Sean McVay as head coach.
Yeah, he was everything for the Rams. Like, he was a big reason why they won the Super Bowl. I mean,
they were even competitive before Matthew Stafford got there, and it was because of Aaron Donald. And now he's no longer in the division. Now you don't have to really circle number 99 on your program and keep a spotlight on him on your TV anymore when the Rams are in town. Bump, you did mention, though, that Kobe Turner, who had a great rookie season, probably slots into where Aaron Donald played this last season. But, I mean, he's not Aaron Donald. And things, I think, in the NFC West are a lot more open than they were 24 hours ago. Everybody kind of thought the Seahawks were probably playing for third place this season because of how upstart the Rams were a year ago, and the 49ers don't seem to be losing a step. But who knows? I mean, yeah, the Seahawks haven't exactly, you know, rocked the boat here in free agency, but there's still plenty of offseason left, and things are a little more open now.
I think it's definitely going to continue to be one of the better divisions in football. There was a while when we were looking at the AFC North and everything, you know, going back and forth between Lamar and Joe Burrow and, you know, what can the Browns do there? And they're really competitive with that defense being absolutely amazing. But, man, the West is still crazy. I don't know that there's any player that leaves a departure quite or leaves a imprint quite like Aaron Donald. I know we were talking during the break, like, who would leave San Francisco and have that same effect? And we couldn't think of anyone with quite that. And that's not to say San Francisco doesn't have a lot of amazing.
They are
a team full of ballers. But like, as Curtis mentioned, they were winning before Christian McCaffrey. He took them to a different level. But like, they could still be great without Debo. They look different, but like, Aaron Donald is uniquely impactful that way. And I don't know who in Seattle leaves that. No one in Seattle leaves that.
No one in this division. Nobody on the defensive side of the ball in the NFL, honestly, if we're being real. I mean, this guy was the best football player in the land the last 10 seasons, in my opinion, if you exclude the quarterbacks and the running backs. He's a pure football player. No, the loss of Aaron Donald does something. But I think the Rams knew this was coming. He tried to retire, what, a year or two ago and ended up offseason going down, and he feels a lot better and wants to come back. So until he signs on the dotted line or he enters his paper into whatever portal that the NFL retires in, because I never officially retire. So if anybody still needs a receiver, come and grab your boy.
Can we count you as an active NFL player?
Hey, I'm still on the market.
You're a free agent.
I'm still a free agent. Never officially retired. But yeah, man, Aaron Donald was a special talent. And selfishly, I'm glad that he is gone. But it's been fun watching him. What that does do is it opens up. Now, the defensive line for the San Francisco 49ers, now they're next up. I mean, you look at who they got over there. They got Nick Bosa. They signed Leonard Floyd. Armstead is gone, right?
Yeah,
he's a free agent. But if there's anybody who inches closer to holding the title as the best defensive line in the division, it is now the 49ers, even though collectively they probably already had it.
And we had the reassurance of knowing, well, Arizona for some reason finds a way to kick itself over and over again. Arizona's looking at the number 4 overall pick. Now, they are projected to either use that to trade back and pick up some nice capital or use it on Marvin Harrison Jr., so they still become a better team. Seattle, with a first-time head coach, a really brilliant, by all accounts, head coach, and John Schneider have a tough task on their hands this offseason. I mean, they are going to need to build as competitive a roster as they possibly can with slightly fewer resources than the 49ers personnel-wise right now and Arizona when it comes to draft picks.
It's building a roster without having the name recognition that other teams might have on that, especially on that D-line. And Draymond Jones is a name that some people recognize. Jay Reid is still there. You have Leonard Williams. And if you count your outside backers as a defensive lineman, which at times they do line up on that D-line, you got Boye Mafe Onwuchena. So, yeah, but that's every team has an area, not of weakness, but an area of concern or where they're not as productive or highly touted as the other part of their team. Right now, you would say it's the linebacker crew for the Seattle Seahawks. I look at the D-line and say, you're okay for now, but you're going to need Cam Young to come around. We'll see what Mike Morris looks like after he gets healthy. And your outside backers with the addition of Achena is going to help that situation.
Yeah, I think that one of the conversations that's been happening about the Seahawks is what if they were closer than we think, right? Like, what if Achena doesn't get hurt? What if they have a different defensive coordinator. And that's not to begrudge Clint Hurt, but more to say that there was a lot that wasn't working to make everything fall apart. Like, more than one person is failing when that much is going wrong. So it'll be really, really fascinating. I know the big story of today has been Seattle getting a new young quarterback to get in there and compete and be the backup and support Geno. But obviously Aaron Donald retiring does have a huge impact in the NFC West. And that, of course, matters for the Seattle Seahawks. All right. Well, it doesn't look like this game has picked up. The spring breakout game in Peoria still delayed for rain. The Mariners big league game has been canceled, so we're waiting to see if the spring breakout game is going to pick back up, in which case you'll see and hear about some of these really young, awesome players. Meanwhile, though, Wyman and Bob are still out there, and while it's raining, they're still going to have fun with you guys, going to have some great Mariner stuff live from Peoria, live from spring training, coming your way next. For Michael Bumpus, Curtis Rogers, Matt Nelson, I'm Stacey Rost. Don't go anywhere.